And now, live from Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Countdown for blast-off. X minus one.
Richard Diamond, private detective.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
All right, about 11 await here on a Saturday night. This is January 28th, 2017, program 149 of the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. To my right, the vivacious and very effervescent, very bubbly and very dimply, Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
Well, that's an introduction. Hi, Carl.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I saw you, like, what, 25 times this week?
Yeah, isn't that something?
We're going to talk about why we saw each other earlier in the week.
We sure did.
And straight ahead, the kind of curly-haired Elif Garris in there. What's up, Elif? How are you?
I'm upset because I don't have an introduction anymore.
Well, oh, yeah. Wait, what did I used to say? Elif,
she's from Turkey,
but she's no Turkey,
Turkey
when it comes to producing this show.
That was great.
Yes, we're here, and we have some classic radio shows. I thought we'd do something different.
Okay, good.
Classic radio
great.
Shows.
Great, that would be fun.
We have three of them all the way till 2 o'clock in the morning. We're going to start things off with my favorite classic radio show of all time, Boston Blackie, Good Detective Adventure. Then Duffy's Tavern, one of the funniest comedies of the golden age of radio. Then Robert Cummings stars in Cavalcade of America. So a detective, a comedy, and a drama. That's all coming your way right here on the WGN Radio Theater. And it's all brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop. Brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the upcoming TV series When We Rise, which chronicles the setbacks and triumphs of a diverse family who helped pioneer the U.S. civil rights movement.
All right. What do they win?
And I was lucky enough to meet this actress and interview her, if you remember. Right.
Not really.
No. Okay. Well, it was very exciting for me. $25 gift certificate for Lumel Nadi's Pizza.
All right. The number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. She played Oda Mae Brown from 1990's Ghost.
Yes, I'm here to fill out a signature card for a new account.
All right, who is that actress? Very, very familiar voice. You could tell who that is. 312-981-7200. We'll be right back.
And we're back. This is the WGN Radio Theater. We're playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it one more time.
Yes, I'm here to fill out a signature card for a new account.
And we've got Steve on the line from Riverside. Hey, Steve.
Good evening.
How are you?
Doing good. Doing
great,
good.
Great. Thank you for calling in, and we're thinking that you recognize the voice of that famous actress.
None other than Whoopi Goldberg.
You are right, Whoopi Goldberg. And you are a winner. You have won a Lumel Nadi's gift certificate, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza, and my ultimate favorite deep dish pizza. You can find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at lumelnadi's.com. Carl is chomping at the bit, Steve. He's got to talk to you.
I was just going to say this, Steve. You want a pizza, Whoopi.
Well, if you could have a pizza with Whoopi,
yeah,
that would be a
welcome.
Lot of fun.
Thanks for calling in. You're a winner. We appreciate you, Steve.
Take care.
All righty. It's time for our first classic radio show, Lisa. You ready for this?
It is Boston Blackie, so I am ready.
You're going to see why I like Boston Blackie so much, because he's kind of a smarty pants.
Oh, I'm aware of that.
He's quite the smarty pants of a detective.
Yeah, I understand.
If I was going to be a detective, I'd be just like Boston Blackie. See, I'm a radio host, and I'm a smarty pants.
You are a smarty
pants. And if I was a detective, I'd be a smarty pants. He was a fictional amateur detective character created by Jack Boyle. He was a criminal, Lisa. He was a criminal. But he went to jail and reformed and said, you know what? I'm rehabilitated now, and I'm not going to be a safecracker and a criminal and a master thief anymore. I'm going to help the police, and I'm going to help those in need. So he was enemy to those who make him an enemy friend to those who have no friend. That was his moniker. And there were silent films from 1919 to 1927. And then Columbia Pictures had brought him back in the era where there were talkies, and they cast Chester Morris as Boston Blackie in 14 films, very successful films, starting in 1941. On radio, Chester Morris reprised the role for one summer season in 1944, but then a syndicated version came to radio starring Dick Calmar as Boston Blackie in 1945. There was about 200 episodes. And then it also made a transition to television with Kent Taylor. So there were like a bunch of people that played Boston Blackie. I think the only person that didn't play Boston Blackie was me.
You.
Yeah,
exactly.
I want to play him.
Right. Well, you are him.
Yeah.
You know, in your own brain.
In my own mind.
Exactly.
I am Boston Blackie. And we have an episode for you now from November 12th, 1946. This is called Only One Way Out for Me. It stars Dick Calmar. Here's part one now of Boston Blackie.
I don't know what you can tell Mr. Kingston, sir. His credit manager insisted we pay him the money we owe his firm and pay it immediately.
I'll tell him something. If he ever gets on this telephone. I've been holding the line waiting for him for 5 minutes now.
I tried to tell the credit manager we'd take care of the matter, Mr. Burton, but he wouldn't listen. And frankly, sir, I've run out of excuses.
I understand. I think...
Hello?
Here's Kingston now. Oh, Charlie. Charlie, this is Ralph Burton.
Oh, hello, Burton. I have a memorandum on my desk to call you.
Yes, I know. I called because I want to explain about that money we owe you.
Well, the amount is $30,000, isn't it?
Yes, and Charlie, I don't have it. I'm up against a brick wall right now. I'm pressed for cash. You've got to give me time.
Well, I'd gladly give you another 30 days, Burton, but the board of directors turned me down. They insist on immediate payment. And I wish there was something I could do for you, Ralph, really, but there isn't. I've no control over my directors. They're insisting that you pay what you owe, or they want to put you in bankruptcy.
Well, I won't kid you, Charlie. There's no way I can pay you now. Bankruptcy will only ruin me permanently. Give me time, please. Yours isn't my only obligation. Everybody wants money.
I don't want to appear hard, Burton. There's nothing I can do. I guess it's your problem, and it's up to you to solve it.
Yes, I suppose that's right. This isn't your fault, Charlie. There's only one solution to my problem. Yes, I'm afraid there's only one way out for me.
And now meet Dick Calmar as Boston Blackie. Enemy to those who make him an enemy. Friend to those who have no friend.
Coming. Well, hello, Mary. Come on in.
Thanks, Blackie. Are you spending a quiet evening at home?
I was, till now. Mm-hmm. I wasn't supposed to pick you up for half an hour, right?
Yes, but I had to do some shopping, and I found myself near here, so I thought I'd drop in and save you the trip. We can go to the movies from your apartment just as well as from mine.
Suits me. I was just finishing this newspaper, anyhow. Kind of dull. Not an interesting murder in it.
Oh, murders aren't interesting. They're practically deadly.
That's the general idea of the murderer.
Glad you like it. Just before I left my apartment, I was reading the story on the suicide of Ralph Burton. Did you read it?
The Burton the Textile Man? Yes, here it is on page one. Faraday gets billing in it. Seems that the good inspector, after duly inspecting the body, the gun found in Burton's hand, and a suicide note, quite expansively announced Burton as a suicide.
And despite the fact that the inspector thinks it's suicide, you don't think it is? Oh, Blackie, don't you feel well?
Feel fine. But Faraday's right most of the time, Mary. Only time he isn't is when he doesn't agree with me.
Said he, modestly.
Well, somebody has to say it, and if I don't, who would?
Well, let's talk about the movie we're going to see. Shall I find out what's playing?
That might be an idea.
Well, let me see. At the Dorian... Uh-oh.
Well, we have a visitor. Could be no movies tonight, if it's the right kind of visitor. Come in.
Hello, Blackie, Mary.
Charlie hello. Kingston. Come in, Charlie.
Charlie, Blackie and I are going to a movie. You want to come?
Well, some other time, perhaps, Mary. Blackie, I must talk to you.
Well, of course, Charlie. Go right ahead. What's the trouble?
It's the suicide of Ralph Burton. Have you read about it?
Yes, of course.
Well, he owed me a lot of money, Blackie, and he called me today. Perhaps I was a little too rough. I didn't realize his back was up against the wall.
Oh, I'm sure you didn't, Charlie.
Well, what about it? Suppose you did pressure him a little. You're not censuring yourself because he killed himself, are you?
Well, yes, I am. I want you to do something about it.
What could Blackie do?
Well, he could find the real reason Burton killed himself. A reason that maybe wouldn't be connected with me.
Go ahead. Well, go ahead, I'm listening.
Well, Inspector Faraday, it's all in the formation of the letters. Here's how we know the Burton suicide note was genuine. Absolutely and unquestionably. Here are dozens of letters we know he wrote. Here's his suicide note.
They sure look the same to me.
They are the same. I've been handwriting expert on your staff for 20 years, Inspector, and there isn't any doubt that one man wrote the suicide note and the other letters. Absolutely and definitely.
Okay, Flint. That's what I thought when I said Burton's death was suicide. Thanks for agreeing with me. I guess this case is closed up tight.
What's closed up tight? Apparently it isn't your mouth.
Blackie, what do you want here at headquarters?
In, for one thing, Faraday. Who's your friend?
He's our handwriting expert, Joe Flynn.
And I've really got to get back to my office, actually and positively, I mean. I'll see you later, Inspector.
Well, Blackie?
Faraday, why did Burton commit suicide?
How should I know? And there's no way of asking him now.
Well, I want to know why he killed himself. And I've got news for you. I'm going to find out.
You're going to find yourself out. Out on the sidewalk if you don't lay off this case, Blackie. It's closed. Sealed and solid.
Sounds like a description of your head. It was closed, sweetheart, but I'm reopening it. And I'm warning you, Faraday, stay out of this case. I don't want any interference from you.
Interference from me? Don't be silly. I'm through with Burton. He's a suicide. He probably had a reason to kill himself, and as far as I'm concerned, I don't... Who are you telling to stay out of a case? Me?
See how silly that sounds? Now maybe you'll stop saying it to me whenever I come around to help you.
Make your bets, please, ladies and gentlemen. Deal draw at 16, stop at 17. All ready? I guess you're the only one who cares for blackjack, Mrs. Burton.
I'll have a card.
Yes, yes, of course. Slide it right out of the box and to you. Six. Another?
One more.
Right. An eight. Mm-hmm. Another?
No. No, I'll stay with these.
Very well. I turn my bottom card over. That's a queen. That's ten. I take a card. A three. 13. I draw one more. Jack, I'm over.
Yeah.
You win, Mrs. Burton. Mm-hmm. Kindly turn your cards up.
Yes, of course. I have a four, a six, an eight, 18.
Right.
Right.
Play again?
Yes, I think so.
Make your bets, please, ladies and gentlemen.
Mrs. Burton?
Yes?
Somebody would like to see you in the boss's office.
See me?
That's right, ma'am.
Who is it?
I don't know, Mrs. Burton. He didn't say, but it must be okay with Tony. He wouldn't be using the office.
That doesn't mean it's all right with me, but I'll find out in a minute.
I'll show you the way, Mrs. Burton, if you want.
No, never mind, thank you. I know the way. You might tell Tony, though, that I want to see him, if you can find him.
I'll tell him, Mrs. Burton.
You wanted to
close
see
the door, Mrs. Burton. Yes, I wanted to see him. I'm Boston Blackie. I want some information about your husband. By the way, you don't look very heartbroken.
You should have given me more time. I'd have put on an act for you.
Mrs. Burton, why did your husband kill himself? As if you cared.
I don't know. He just did, that's all. What are you snooping around for?
The reason. And the reason why you suddenly could pay your gambling debts with him dead. You see, Tony told me that you and he were all square. Now. Oh, hello, Tony.
Hello, Blackie. I see you got Mrs. Burton okay.
Yes, thanks, Tony. I think I got her very okay.
Tony, what's the idea of allowing this man to practically accuse me of killing my husband?
Blackie, you said you...
wanted to see Mrs. Burton on business? Well, I did. And I do.
That isn't exactly like I figured you meant, Blackie. Maybe you hadn't better insult my customers. Especially a lady like Mrs. Burton.
I don't insult ladies.
He certainly insulted me, Tony.
I don't insult ladies.
Look, Ed, I don't like that kind of cute talk. I'll let you use my office, Blackie, because I'd rather you was on my side than against me. But maybe you're better for Moose now, huh?
Oh, I don't think so. I'm not ready to leave yet.
No?
I take it back. I'm ready. Put the gun away, Tony. I'm liable to explode. Only I told you that I was here on business, didn't I? Well, I am. Only now, apparently, it's unfinished business.
Just shave it over once, Mike, like always.
Yes, sir, Tony. Once over it is.
Sir? Ain't out of my eye, Mike. Keep the leather out of my eye.
Yes, sir, Tony. Out of the eye it is. There we are. Sorry.
How do you like being my own private barber, Mike?
Aces, sir. Aces.
Working up here in my apartment instead of the barber shop. Working at my gambling tables at night. Like that?
Yes, sir, Tony. Sure like that.
Well, step on it, then, if you like it so much. I got a date with a young punk who worked for that Burton guy that knocked himself off. He ought to be here in 5 minutes. I want to be through by then.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Tony, you ain't going to the fights Friday night. They got a good card.
I ain't. But you can. You got the night off.
Tony. Oh, Tony.
Well, there's that punk George that worked for Burton. Be on the minute, George. Wipe the lather off, Mike. I'll be back.
Yes, sir. This minute. There you are, sir.
Yeah, that's a good boy. Maybe when I get back, you'll give me a massage.
Sure, I'll do it.
What was that?
I said, yes, sir.
That's different. Hi, George.
Hello, Tony. Well, you said to come here, and here I am.
Good. I got a little dough for you, sonny. $1,000 for being a good boy.
Gee, thanks, Tony.
$1,000. Tipping off the late Mr. Burton's creditors that his business was going a-flooey. $1,000. So he knocks himself off and his wife winds up with 100 G's and pays me the 15,000 she owes me. Good business. There you are. $300, $400, $600, $800, $1,000. They're all yours, kid.
Thanks, Tony. Oh, only you know something? My conscience is bothering me a little bit.
Forget it, kid. Just think of Mr. Burton. Nothing's bothering him anymore.
That's the first portion of Boston Blackie, November 12th, 1946. Only One Way Out for Me, starring Dick Kalmar. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, you know what, Lisa?
Carl is in his glory right now.
I gotta tell you, I was reliving my youth on Thursday. And it was fond memories because Lisa and I were at Drury Lane, which is...
At the theater, Drury Lane Theater.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, well, the Drury Lane has a lot of pieces and parts.
We were at the Drury Lane Theater and we saw Saturday Night Fever. It was phenomenal. Phenomenal. And that's why we're playing a little...
It was very exciting. I've been seeing shows at Drury Lane Theater for many, many years, and I always love going to Drury Lane. I always
it's
say
fabulous
that it
theater.
Has a top-notch level of acting there. They have top choreographers, top actors, top directors, and the venue itself is absolutely beautiful and comfortable. It's actually one of my very favorite theaters to visit.
It's huge, and it's fantastic, and every seat is great. And the music that they played in Saturday Night Fever. But
well,
you're right.
It's the Bee Gees,
you're 100%
you know.
Right, Lisa. I've gone to Drury Lane Theater for years. Everything they do there is top notch.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So
and this was fantastic.
What they did is they revised it and rewrote Saturday Night Fever for the Drury Lane stage.
Yeah.
It features the music by the Bee Gees. And, of course, it's based on the film Saturday Night Fever.
Yeah, there was only one thing that they could have made better. They could have cast
me as Tony Manero. Well, let me tell you something.
Don't touch the hair.
That Tony
Manero.
You know,
I worked really hard on the hair, and he touches my hair.
He was great.
He was
very likable guy.
Fantastic.
We felt for him.
Quite a good dancer.
You know, I really liked him.
I was going to give him some tips
on the hair. But other than that, this show is running through March 19th.
On the hair.
On the hair at Drury Lane Theater. You can check out their website for more information, which is drurylanetheater.com. If anybody has any questions about the show, we'd certainly be here to answer them. But most importantly, Carl and I took a picture at Drury Lane Theater. We have it posted on our Facebook page. Check it out. What a party they gave
and,
there.
You know, in the picture, Lisa is a little taller than me, and that's because she had high heels on. I didn't have my platform shoes
so
on.
So not true. I was barefoot. No kidding.
But seriously, folks, Drury Lane is the place to see theater because it is just the best venue out there. And
they
I
have
loved
dinner
it.
Packages there.
Oh, yeah.
We had a very big, beautiful press party there mm-hmm. afterwards with dancing and a band and mm-hmm. food, and it was a lot of fun. So we hope that you will check out this
and
show.
And Lisa
Saturday
is always
Fever.
In a good mood when she's at the theater because she's
That's
Broadway
true.
Lisa.
It's true.
Lisa is in her element
yes.
at the theater.
I go to the theater.
You should just,
I love theater.
You should just live in a theater.
I would
Maybe
like
Drury
that.
Lane Theater would let you live there.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I have to bring my other members of my family and my dog.
Well, you know,
we'll
just think how much happier you'd be when you're on the air with me. You wouldn't
sure
be so
would.
Mean to me all the time.
Right. I'd just be in a good mood instead of this
I
normal
know.
Nastiness.
Check out Saturday Night Fever. It's at Drury Lane Theater. Go to their website.
DruryLaneTheater.com.
All right. It was fantastic. All right. Let's get back now to this episode of Boston Blackie.
Blackie, tell me, have you found out anything? I haven't slept now in 2 nights.
I'm sorry, Charlie. Apparently there's nothing to find out. I did locate Mrs. Burton and did find that she isn't terribly broken up over her husband's death, but that means nothing.
I know it doesn't.
You see, Charlie, if this weren't such an obvious case of suicide, perhaps it'd be something I might uncover that might make you feel better.
Oh, it's suicide, all right, Blackie. That note Burton left leaves no doubt about that. It's obvious.
All right, you are. Say, wait a minute. Maybe everything is too obvious.
Well, what do you mean, too obvious?
I mean a lot of things. Listen, Charlie. I know Burton left his wife a sizable fortune. That could be a motive for murder.
Oh, Blackie, I wish what you are saying could possibly be true, but it can't. Burton was a suicide, all right. In fact, as I remember things now, he tried to kill himself once before, 10 years or so ago. Apparently, the thought stayed with him all these years.
That could be a part of the murder plan. And if this is a murder plan, Charlie, if it is, it's a beauty.
You honestly think that Burton might have been murdered?
I'm hoping that's what it is.
Well, then do something about it, Blackie, please. I can't go on like this, believing I was responsible for the man's life.
Take it easy, Charlie. I'm going to find out who was responsible for the man's death.
Boston Blackie's friend, Charlie Kingston, believes he is responsible for the suicide of Ralph Burton. Blackie, in trying to ease Kingston's conscience, finds that Mrs. Burton is seemingly unaffected by the death of her husband, that she is an habitué of Tony's, a gambling house, and that she has been left a fortune by her husband. The police are certain that Burton was a suicide, principally because of an authentic note indicating his intention, which they found near the body. But Blackie thinks it's murder. As we return to our story, Inspector Faraday calls at Blackie's apartment.
Come in.
Hi, Miss Wesley.
Hi.
Blackie here?
No, I'm waiting for him, too. What's up, Inspector?
Balloons.
Oh.
How should I know what's up?
Well, at least I didn't ask what's new. You'll have to admit that that's in my favor.
I couldn't answer that either. All I know is I got a complaint from a Mrs. Burton that Blackie was bothering her. And I came up to tell him to lay off.
Mrs. Burton? The widow of the man who committed suicide?
Yeah. What's Blackie want with her?
Well, I don't know, but... Oh, here's Blackie now. Ask him yourself.
Hi, Mary. Hello, Inspector. I'm sorry I didn't know you were coming, or I would have ordered something for you.
Poison, probably.
Not probably, preferably. Is this a business visit, or won't there be any laughs?
I'll laugh you. Blackie, stay away from Mrs. Burton. She doesn't like you.
Thank goodness for that.
Faraday, I've just come from Charlie Kingston's. You know, I don't think Mr. Burton committed suicide.
Uh-huh. I suppose somebody put his hand on a pen and forced him to write that suicide note.
No, that note has me stopped. I admit that. But your handwriting expert, Mr. Definitely and Positively Flynn, is getting me some information on it.
He's getting it for you?
Well, he thinks it's for you. I told him I was calling for you and that you wanted to find out what kind of paper that note was written on and that he was to call you at my place. He said he would. Say, I should have been a confidence man.
You should have been an ape.
Go ahead, boys. I'll keep score.
And mark up Faraday's bright remarks on the left-hand side, Mary. You can't write with your left hand. But then again, you won't have to.
Is that so? I could write...
The world will have to wait for the conclusion of your latest epigram, Inspector.
Oh, yeah? Well, I'll take that call. It's probably Flynn. I'll move, Blackie. Oh. Yeah?
Hello? Is Inspector Faraday there?
Speaking. This you, Flynn?
Why, yes, Inspector.
Well, what did you find out?
About the suicide note? I found out something very interesting.
Don't entertain me. Give me the facts.
Well, the paper that note was written on was Maxwell Bond number 78, made by the Maxwell Bond Paper Company.
And that's interesting?
Absolutely and unquestionably. When did Mr. Burton write that suicide note?
Just before he died, naturally. Yesterday. Why?
Why? Because the Maxwell Bond Paper Company went out of business 9 years ago. Goodbye, Inspector.
Blackie, did you hear that? The paper the suicide note was written on was made by the Maxwell Bond Paper Company, and they went out of business 9 years ago.
You know, that makes me think, Inspector.
Blackie, maybe if that note paper was made by a company that went out of business a long time ago, well, maybe that suicide note the police found was the one he wrote when he tried to kill himself 10 years ago.
No, maybe about it.
You think somebody picked it up at that time and then kept it from the police?
It's possible. Then, when it was expedient to murder Burton, the 10-year-old note was dropped alongside the body after a gun was put in a dead man's hand.
That means it was Mrs. Burton.
That seems relatively reasonable for you, Faraday. Where are you going?
Out to Mrs. Burton's house. Why? You going to try and beat me there?
Me? I may be there later, but I'm going to take a chance and drop in at Burton's office first.
I'm George Anderson. I was Mr. Burton's assistant. You wanted to see me, Blackie?
Yes, George. I want some information. I want to know why Mr. Burton was murdered.
Murdered? The police said it was suicide.
Forget that. Listen, kid. My friend Charlie Kingston said that he got a telephone tip-off that your late boss's credit wasn't too good.
Well, how does that affect me? I had nothing to do with it.
No? Well, Charlie said he thought he recognized your voice. Now, if it was your voice and you got Kingston to be tough with Burton, you're in this thing up to what passes for a chin you've got there.
Blackie, I had nothing to do with any phone call.
No? Maybe if I worked on you a little, your memory'd start getting better.
No.
Yes, I think that's a pretty good idea. I think I'll take you apart a little bit.
No, don't. Don't come near me. I made the call. I had to make it. Tony paid me.
Tony?
Yes, Tony.
So he's in this thing again, huh? He doesn't know it yet, but he's got something coming to him. Something and somebody. And the somebody is me.
Keep the wheel going, Davey. I'll stick around and watch for a while.
Okay, Tony. Make your bets, ladies and gentlemen. There's got to be a winner. One of the numbers always turns
I think maybe
up.
It's your number that's turned up this time, Tony. All right,
Blackie, didn't I tell you the layoff this joint and me?
Yes, but I don't hear very well. Come on into your office, Tony. A friend of yours is waiting there for you. A fellow named George. He used to work for Burton.
Keep the game going, Davey.
Right.
How'd you find George Blackie?
I'm the curious type, Tony. I got a little tip on him and coaxed him to open up to me.
He sang?
Like a nightingale. And your name was his top note, Tony. Come on in. This is your office, remember?
I know.
All right. Now start talking, George. Just say what you told me.
Tony, I didn't mean to do this to you, only Blackie said he'd go to work on me, so I only told him that you paid me to... Oh!
You talk too much.
And you don't talk enough. Come on, Tony. You've got a long speech to make.
Think so?
No, so. I took your gun out of the desk drawer, so don't talk too tough to me, kid. You can't back it up this time.
What is it I'm supposed to talk about?
The reason Burton was killed. And don't give me any of that suicide talk. Burton was murdered by his wife, I think. Very cutely, too. Very brilliantly planned. She's a smart gal, that Mrs. Burton. And if I prove this a murder... She'll find a way of throwing the heat on you.
Tony,
you shut up. You talk too much. So, Blackie, you think it was murder. And you think if the police find out it was murder, Mrs. Burton's gonna try and put the finger on me.
That's right. What are you gonna do about it?
I don't know. I know that dame a long time. 10, 15 years. She gets what she wants most of the time.
So do I. And I got what I wanted from you just now, Tony, a little information. You know, I think I'm going to stay here for a while.
You know, Mrs. Burton, we could do a lot of things. We could sit here and look at each other, or we could get down to business.
What do you mean by getting down to business, Inspector Faraday?
You could tell me what you know about your husband's death. That's what I mean. And don't think I'm still working on the idea that he was a suicide, because I'm not.
You, think it was murder?
How'd you guess? I think a lot of things more, too. Only I'm a police officer, and I gotta have proof. But you're going to admit that you knew you'd come into a barrel of cash with your husband dead, that you didn't want him to know you were gambling, and that you owed that Tony guy a lot of money.
I admit all of that.
Well, now we're getting somewhere. Now I want you to admit that when your husband tried to knock himself off 10 years ago, you were in the house and could have picked up the suicide note he wrote at that time.
I was in the house, and I could have picked up the note.
Good. So you had a motive, you had a perfect alibi, and you killed him. Admit it, Mrs. Burton. You killed your husband.
Oh, no, Inspector Faraday. I said I could have picked up the note, but I didn't.
That's what you say. I say you did. I say you're in this thing with both feet. And I say that you're going to admit that you killed him right now.
Oh, no,
you don't. Stay right where you are. I'll answer that. Hello?
Is that you, Faraday?
Oh, it's you, Blackie. Who do I sound like?
Let's not go into a routine, Faraday. I've got news for you.
You've got news for me. Look, Blackie, I'm here with Mrs. Burton. She admits everything about her husband's murder, except that she did it. Now get off this phone so I can wind up this case.
Oh, so you have Mrs. Burton all ready to confess.
5 more minutes and it's a cinch. She knows she can't fool me.
Well, she's the only one who can't. Faraday, I want you to listen to a friend of mine named Tony. I'm in his office right now, and he's got something to say to you.
Blackie, what are you trying to pull?
Quiet, Faraday. Come on, Tony. Start talking. You've got an audience on the other end of this phone that's just dying to hear what you've got to say. Now, go on, talk.
All right. Faraday, this is Tony. I killed Burton.
What did you say?
I knew him for a long time. First time he tried to kill himself 10 years ago, I was in the house. I copped the suicide note. Then I got this big idea a couple of weeks ago when his wife couldn't get up the dough she owed me.
You killed him? But you couldn't have. I have it all figured out that it was Mrs. Burton here. How could I be that wrong?
How, Faraday? Well, that's easy. You've had so darn much practice.
You know, of course, don't you, Blackie, that I still don't know how you got Tony to confess.
Oh, it was nothing really, Mary. When he found I was talking to Faraday on the phone, he just had to speak to him. But he couldn't make up anything on the spur of the moment, so he told the truth.
That he killed Mr. Burton. Well, Charlie Kingston certainly is happy about it, but what put you on Tony's trail?
One little remark he made. He said he'd known the Burtons for a long time, which means that he knew them when Burton first tried to kill himself. Now, I never knew that before. And that got me thinking.
Wonderful little that to be able to do a thing like that.
Mary, don't you want to hear about this?
Oh, it's this now. It was that a second ago. How things do change.
Yes, don't they? Well, Mary, here's the way I reasoned it. If Tony was around 10 years ago, maybe it was he who grabbed the original suicide note and thought up this murder plan.
Maybes don't count, though.
No, you're right. I needed proof, so I sat down with Tony very nice and comfortably, and I said, Tony, my boy, won't you please tell me that you killed Mr. Burton?
And then he sipped his tea, looked up and said, well, yes, old man, matter of fact, I did. Rather unsporting of me, what?
Something like that. Anyhow, I asked him if he'd mind terribly telling that to Faraday, and he said, of course not, old fellow. Love to do it and all that sort of thing, and he did.
You mean to say you just asked him to do it and he did it?
That's all, Mary.
I believe it, Blackie, completely. Only I'd better put another piece of adhesive tape on your knuckles. They're bleeding a little again.
That's Boston Blackie. See why I like Boston Blackie so much, Lisa?
Why, Carl?
Because he's a smarty pants.
That's a really nice way to put it.
He's a smarty pants, and he always solves the murder.
Yep.
He always solves the crime. And what I love about Boston Blackie is he had this kind of a love affair, like a friendly love affair with the police inspector. The police inspector was always really trying to pin the murder on Blackie, but really the inspector liked Blackie a lot. You know, really respected that he was a criminal, but was rehabilitated.
Turned his life around.
They had this interesting dynamic between the two of them. And then his girlfriend, Mary Wesley, who was a nurse on the show, she always helped him as well. And then he had another guy called Shorty. In the movies, he was called Runt. Maybe that's who I would play in these Boston Blackie movies.
The little guy.
And you would be Mary.
Sure.
And then we'd have to get a taller person. Maybe
David.
David. Maybe David would want to play Boston Blackie. He has a nice deep voice for
it. He certainly does.
He's great Boston Blackie. Plus, he's tall.
He certainly is.
Yeah. And anyway, this was an episode called Only One Way Out for Me, November 12, 1946. Dick Calmar as Boston Blackie. And you heard Leslie Woods as Mary. And then Maurice Tarplin, she's doing this thing where she's telling me to break. All right. Maurice Tarplin was Inspector Faraday. Let's break for commercials. We'll be right back. All right. It is 6 minutes after midnight. Thank you, David. We appreciate you, my friend. And you're going to play Boston Blackie, we've decided, because Boston Blackie was tall and he had a deep voice. So that's it.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're playing Boston Blackie. I'm playing Shorty. Lisa's going to play Mary, and Elf's going to be the murderer, the bad guy.
Of course she is.
That's what we've decided. We're going to do a radio reenactment.
I'll make quick work of all of that.
All right. He'll solve the crime. All right. Well, in this hour, it's Duffy's Tavern, a good broadcast from 1951. Then Cavalcade of America, starring Robert Cummings. That's coming your way all the way to 2 o'clock in the morning, and it's brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow!
This actor writes, directs, and stars in the upcoming TV series David Brent, Life on the Road, as he lives his dream of being a rock star.
Yeah, and they're going to win some Twilight Zone CDs, huh?
Yeah, right, a four-CD set. Nice.
Wow, four Twilight
Zone
episodes.
Carl Amari is the producer of these Twilight Zones.
Lisa Wolf's one of the actresses in there, probably. You'll find her in there.
I'm here and there.
She's got like a line here.
Got like, you know, the fourth girl from the right.
Right.
Yeah.
But you do a great job at it.
Yes, I
do. You can always pick out the fourth girl from the right.
That's me.
Twilight Zone, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor was the star of 2009's The Invention of Lying.
The reason I'm calling is I want to ask you out on another date.
Yeah. I do like his accent.
Well, I ask you out
on
another
date.
It's very
attractive.
Another date.
All right. When he says it.
312-981-7200. Who is that actor? We'll find our winner after these words.
We are back. This is show 149 of the WGN Radio Theater, playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it one more time.
The reason I'm calling is I want to ask you out on another date.
Ooh, I like that accent. Let's talk to George from Glendale Heights. Hi, George.
Hi, how you doing?
Great, how you doing?
Good, good.
Good, we're glad you called in, and we're hoping you know that actor.
Yes, it's Ricky Gervais.
It is Ricky Gervais. He is very talented, and he's the guy, and we're so happy to give you a 4-CD Twilight Zone set. Carl produces them. They are fantastic. He only gets the finest of actors. Who are some of the actors involved in these Twilight Zones?
Jim Caviezel, Lou Gossett Jr., Michael York, Lou Diamond Phillips, Luke Perry, Lisa Wolf.
Yeah, some of the best of the best. So we're so happy to give that to you. And thank you so much for calling in and
thank
for listening.
Very
Take
You're
care,
very
George.
Welcome, George. Thanks for calling in. Yeah, David Eigenberg from Chicago Fire. Who I think Elif has a little crush on. She's always talking about David. She has a little crush on David Eigenberg.
Well, I've never met him, so I
can't. Yeah, nice guy. Super great guy. He did a terrific job in the Twilight Zones.
I'm sure.
All right, it's time for Duffy's Tavern. This was a comedy. Came to radio in 1940. And Duffy's Tavern was a flea-infested dive on 3rd and 23rd Streets in New York City, where the elite meet to eat. Ed Gardner was Archie the manager, and Duffy was an absentee owner. He never appeared on the show. He would call in at the beginning of the show, Archie would answer, and he'd talk to Duffy, but you never heard from Duffy. But Duffy's man-hungry daughter, Miss Duffy, was there a lot, and she was played by a variety of actors. One of them was Shirley Booth.
Oh, sure.
Hazel.
Yeah, sure.
And Shirley Booth was actually married to Ed Gardner for a while. The regular characters included Eddie the Waiter, Clancy the Cop. There was often guest stars, including Abe Burrows, Larry Marks. And the writers were Larry Gelbart and Dick Martin of Rowan and Martin, along with Abe Burrows. And in 1949, the show moved offshore from New York City to Puerto Rico for tax advantages. They took the whole series, all of the actors, moved them offshore to Puerto Rico.
Yeah, they probably weren't complaining about that
to
move.
Save money. And then they would take a boat over
right?
from New York to do
yeah.
the show. Pretty interesting.
Sounds,
they would, yeah. yeah. I mean, we should do that.
Yeah,
save
I was just
some
thinking.
Money. Let's go to Puerto
let's
Rico.
Go to Puerto Rico and
broadcast
see how that goes
the
for
WGN
us.
WGN Radio
It'd
Theater.
Be a lot warmer there.
This is a broadcast from November 2nd, 1951. And it's all about a Spanish floor show. Here's part one now of Duffy's Tavern.
It's Duffy's Tavern, brought to you transcribed by the National Broadcasting Company with Charlie Cantor as Finnegan, Hazel Sherman as Miss Duffy, Fats Pichon at the piano, and starring Archie himself, Ed Gardner. Hello, Duffy's Tavern, where the elite meet the Archie, the manager speaking. Duffy ain't here. Oh, hello, Duffy. Huh? You what? Duffy, I can't believe it. After all these years, the stork? Holy God. Was Mrs. Duffy surprised? No more than you was, huh? Well, how do you like that? And I thought you folks were spending all your time watching television. Hey, Fats.
Yeah?
Guess what? Duffy took his wife to the stork club. So you went to the stork club, huh? Tell me, did Mrs. Duffy cause much commotion with that new evening gown, the one with the bare back? Yeah, huh? An old Indian fighter jumped out of the window. He thought it was a buffalo. Stop exaggerating, Duffy. How about you? Did you go formal in a tuxedo? Oh, semi-formal. You couldn't find the pants. Well, tell me, how was the crowd at this dog? A wealthy South American spent $1,000? You wish we could get customers to spend dough like that. Well, so do I, but it takes brains to make $1,000, and if a guy has enough brains to make it, he's got too much brains to spend in a dump like this. Yeah, well, I'm glad you had a nice time, and thanks for calling. Hey, Fats, imagine a guy spending $1,000 in a nightclub. Do you realize what you can buy for $1,000 today?
Sure. $300 worth of groceries.
That's all right. Boy, $1,000. Let's see. Champagne, filet mignon, caviar. It's almost $40 a burp. But probably Duffy's exaggerating. How can anybody spend $1,000 in a nightclub?
Walter Winchell says he can.
Well, what do you mean?
It says right here in this column, biggest spender of the week, South American gold mine operator, Diego Dinero. Senor Dinero has dropped over 10 G's in Broadway hotspots.
10 G's? That's $1,000, all right. What else does he say, Fats?
The Dinero millions were originally made in Uruguay when the senor struck a mother load.
Oh, well, that city must be a real crumb striking his mother when she's loaded. Well, I'm glad that type don't patronize this place, Fats. That kind of money you can have, it's evil gotten gain. Wouldn't think of touching filthy lucre like that.
Senor Dinero is stopping at the plaza.
Hello, Plaza. Hello, Senor Dinero, please. He's taking a siesta? Oh, well, dry him off and put him on the phone. Hello, Senor Dinero? This is Don Accio, the maestro at the mucho famoso Casa del Duffio. Well, senor, look, why don't you come down and give us a tryout? We're in the Spanish section, you know. Los 3rd Avenue in El Bowery. Have we got a Spanish floor show? Have you got 1,000 pesetas? We got a Spanish floor show. Well, okay, we'll be looking for you tonight. Ole!
He's coming down to this hole?
Yeah. Yep, I can see him now. Fat, so austere, dignified, rich beyond avarice, you know. He walks through the door. He hands me a $100 tip, and he says...
Oh,
you broke my reverie.
Oh, sorry, Arch. I'll be glad to replace it.
Oh.
What's your topic?
I was just talking about South American.
South America? Ain't that in Panama?
And how can you be so dumb, South American Panama? Happens to be in Brazil.
Brazil! You know what? I always wanted to go there and see my Uncle Willie.
Uncle Willie?
Yeah. He's got a big cattle ranch down there.
Oh, is that so? How many heads?
The cattle or Uncle Willie?
I'm talking about the cattle.
Oh, he only has one head.
Oh, how many heads has Uncle Willie?
Including the cattle?
Well, including the cattle.
3. You know what? I always wanted to go down there in one of them banana boats.
You like South America, huh?
No, I like bananas.
Well, that's nice. Tell me, are you at all acquainted with South America?
Well, frankly, Arch, I'd like to ask one little question about it.
What?
How did it start?
Well, as I understand it, South America was founded by the early Spaniards, see, so that they could hold their revolutions in more peaceful surroundings. In fact, I think it was the first place in the New Hemisphere where the Spanish flag flew.
It flew there all the way from Spain?
Well, they thought that. The wonderful thing about South America, though, Finnegan, is its music.
Yeah?
It's real beautiful, you know. You sit there in the moonlight, listening to the natives beat their maracas.
Wait a minute, they beat their maracas?
Yeah.
Don't the dames ever slug them back?
And a maracas is a musical instrument. It's similar to a gourd. You know what a gourd is, don't you?
Oh, of course.
What is it?
It's like a maracas.
Well, yes, I would say that's right.
That gets beat up by the dames.
Finnegan, historically speaking, you see, a gourd is an instrument that was formerly used by the natives. They used it for making tom-tom signals out of smoke. Now, these signals was okay when the wind was in the right direction, but when the wind was against them, they couldn't hear the gourd. Hence the expression, it's an ill wind that blows no good.
Arch, you sure's got a knack for explaining things. Well, you know, I like the way you explained about South America.
Oh, thanks.
By the way, I have one little question about it.
What?
How did it start?
It started as a nut on which a lot of little acorns grow. Now, get away from me before I throw a squirrel on you.
Say, Archie.
Oh, hello, Miss Duffy.
Listen to this. Ah, Senor De Niro. You are welcome to the Duffy Tavern. Kiss me, my loved one. Kiss me. That ought to start something.
A war with Spain. Now, you keep away from that Senor De Niro tonight.
Why?
Because I promised him a floor show, not a sideshow. Remember, he happens to be a South American millionaire.
So what? So what's so important about a South American millionaire? I used to go with one.
Who?
Jay Armstrong.
Jay, the guy was a window washer.
He washed windows at the Peruvian embassy.
The Peruvian embassy's in Washington. Besides, how could a guy like that be a millionaire?
On the side, he was making loans for the RFC. And you know what he's doing now?
Yeah, he's sweating. Now, leave me be, Miss Duffy. I want to read the amusement section here. I got to find a senorita to entertain the senor.
Oh, Granada, Granada, Granada,
oh, no.
Granada.
What a Granada. Spanish mackerel. Look, Miss Duffy, you can't compete with them Spanish dames.
Why not?
Well, in the first place, they're dark and sultry and slinky.
I'm slinky.
That must be the Castilian pronunciation. Now, look ahead. You lay off this South American.
Don't you be telling me what I can do around this place.
And why not?
Look, Archie, one little word to Papa, and you once again can become a CPA.
A CPA?
A chicken plucker's assistant. See why I can't meet the senor.
Well, hey, wait a minute. Look what it says here in the paper. New Latin American nightclub singer, a sensation in Manhattan, Josita Hernandez. Says here she's been in movies, too. That's the dame. I think I'll call her up and get her to come down here for Senor De Niro.
But how are you going to find her?
Are you kidding? Don't forget you're talking to the producer of The Man with My Face. With my motion picture contacts, I'll have it down here in 2 ticks on a lamb's tail. Hello, United Artists. This is Archie, the producer of The Man with... Hello? I must have had a bad connection.
Or United Artists must have had a good memory.
I think I'll call one of the other studios. Hello, International Studios? Let me talk to LB.
Who's LB?
Who knows? There's one in every studio. Hello, LB? I'd like to locate an artist named Josita Hernandez. I want her to sing here in Duffy's Tavern. Huh? Suppose she has a suicide clause in her contract? Huh? Listen, LB, do you know who you're talking to? This is BG. Well, that's better. Contact her right away. Okay. Hey, this BG must be an important guy. Must look him up sometime. Now, Fats, leave a South American up the joint before Senor De Niro arrives, huh?
Too bad the senor ain't from Australia. It would save us lots of trouble.
Why?
This place already has that down under look.
Now, leave us see what else we can do to South American up the joint. Now, instead of corned beef and cabbage, we're serving cucarachas under glass. Now, let me see. Fats, better change that sign on the back door there to read, hombres.
Hombres?
Wait, better yet, caballos. Yeah, that ought to do it.
Sorry, but the word is caballeros.
Look, sister, who are you trying to teach me Spanish?
My name is Josita Maria Elena Margarita Consuelo Hernandez.
Well, welcome to your whole family.
All right, that's the first portion of Duffy's Tavern from 1951. We'll be back after these words. All right, Lisa and I are here every Saturday and Sunday night, bringing you the great radio shows from the 1930s, 40s, and 50s. Shows that really aired at a time when radio reigned supreme in the lives of most Americans. These shows were the way people were entertained, Lisa, because they didn't have, you know, it wasn't the same like where you can turn on 50,000 TV channels or, you know, go to the movies, you know, just jump in a car and go to the movies. It wasn't like that back in the 1930s and 40s.
No, but what we've done is bring these back to today.
Yeah.
And make them, they're still cool today. You know,
yeah.
What was cool in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. I think we even appreciate it more today than we may have then, because we weren't there at that time.
Well, you were there because you were born in 1918.
1932.
But, you know, here's the other thing that we do. If you notice, when we play these classic radio shows, 95% of the time, they're going to be in tremendous quality. And that's because the shows that we, first of all, we get the rights to these shows, number one. Number two, when we air these shows, we get the master recordings. And generally, those are on a 16-inch transcription disc that we have a lab transfer. And then Mike Estella, our whiz of an engineer, he does a digital remastering of that to get rid of any clicks and pops. So the quality of the shows that we air on the WGN Radio Theater and the shows that we sell on our website at WGNRadioTheater.com, there's a button you can click and go to our store. And all of the shows that we email people on Mondays are all digitally remastered, so they sound about as good as they aired back in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s. It's very important to us that we broadcast these shows in tremendous quality. That's important. We don't play dubs of dubs of dubs of dub 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 dub.
No, which is what you find on
right.
the internet.
You don't want to hear it like this. I think Boston Blackie went over to the dressing.
That's what usually sounds
yeah,
like.
Yeah, we don't want that.
Nah.
We want it to sound like it's coming through a kazoo.
A kazoo.
A gazoo.
Kazoo.
Kazoo. What is it, a gazoo?
Kazoo.
What is that? What is that?
A gazoo.
I thought it was a kazoo.
Was
it's
it
a kazoo.
It's a kazoo. It's a kazoo. K-A-Z-O-O,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, gazoo kazoo. Is some cartoon
yeah,
character.
Yeah, gazoo right. was the yeah. guy on Fred Flintstone.
There you
little,
go.
The
no, it's a kazoo.
Yeah, kazoo. Okay.
We all
did
had kazoos in
did
school.
Did I start out by saying
you
kazoo?
You did. You said it right.
I said it right the first time.
I think
yeah.
you sneezed first. And
I should have stuck with the first time, right?
Usually the first time's wrong, so it's
yeah.
okay.
With me, it's usually wrong the first time. But remember Gazoo on Fred Flintstone?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, he was the alien from outer space.
That's right.
Had a giant helmet.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, these shows, Roger, you like the sound quality of the shows we play, right?
I love it. It's like
yeah.
it just recorded today.
Yeah, yeah.
Honest
absolutely.
To goodness.
Yes.
Yeah. And you know I'm an audio aficionado.
Yeah, I know that.
So I listen to all the little pops and scratches
you know what?
And stuff.
That ain't all you are.
Hello.
All right, so
I'll be up here if you need me.
Just stay up there.
All right, let's get back now to Duffy's Tavern.
Let me look at you, honey. So you're Josita Hernandez.
Yes.
Well, senorita, may I bid you adios to a poco hacienda?
Oh. Muchas gracias, señor Archie.
Ha, love that Espanol lingo. Well, Josita, plaza, la hatza, la gusta, la matza.
Plaza, la hatza, la gusta, la matza.
Listen to that. This cucaracha's as phony as I am. Look, sister, I got news for you. That language you're talking, it ain't Spanish.
That makes us even.
What do you mean?
That language you're talking, it ain't English.
What do you mean it ain't English?
You hate me. Now stop beating your gums.
Oh, cat. A Latin from Manhattan, from Brooklyn. Tell me, who taught you English? Leo DeRocher?
Nah, DeRocher talks lousy.
Well, you listen to the dame. He could get. What has LB sent me? I dig up a senorita to entertain a South American millionaire, and what do I get? Maxie Rosenblum in high heels. Look, Josita, just for tonight, do you think you could sort of forget that Brooklyn brogue?
Listen, bud, no cracks about Brooklyn, see?
What do you mean, no cracks about Brooklyn?
I happen to be a Dodger fan. And speaking of baseball, what's Joe DiMaggio doing over there?
I beg your pardon.
Now, Miss Hernandez, you've made a grave error. DiMaggio occasionally gets to first base. By the way, let me introduce you. Miss Duffy, this is Josita, who is charming, who is talented. Was beautiful. Josita, this is Miss Duffy, a three-time loser.
Señorita, muchísimo gusto.
Usted es muy graciosa, muy amable, y muy agradable.
Likewise, I'm sure, oh. Miss Hernandez, I understand you've been in pictures.
That's right.
Can you act?
I think so.
Can you dance?
Yes.
Can you sing?
Yes.
Have you ever been investigated?
No.
What a lousy actress.
Miss Duffy, this comes with ill grace from one who has been offered the lead in the female sequel to The Thing.
Oh, yeah, well, it may interest you to know that I have exactly the same measurements as Betty Grable.
You've got the same measurements as Betty Grable.
I certainly have. I read in a movie magazine what she measures around the waist, hips, chest, and legs. And I have the same measurements.
Uh-huh. But in what order? Now, please, scram, Miss Duffy.
What's wrong with her?
Oh, nothing serious. It's just that she's had a split personality ever since somebody told her she resembles both Abbott and Costello. Finnegan?
I was down to the gas works and I could... Hey, who's the little squirt?
Finnegan, ain't you ever heard of Josita, Maria, Margarita, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, I've heard of it, but I've never been there.
Say, Mr. Finnegan, you're cute.
What?
I said you're cute.
Oh, no, you don't, sister.
What's the matter?
That's the way it always starts with dames. First they tell you you're cute. Next thing you know, you're engaged. And you're married. And you're divorced.
Then what?
Then you're not cute anymore.
I'm sorry, Josita. You'll have to forgive Finnegan. You see, as a child, he had an unfortunate experience. They didn't leave him in the developing solution long enough.
By the way, Miss Josita, you got a funny accent.
Well,
how come?
Well, you see, my parents live in South America, but I was born in Brooklyn.
Your parents live, and you was the... It's amazing how you all got together.
And again.
Yeah, yeah.
And again. Yeah. I hear them little voices calling you.
Oh, coming.
Cute little pixie. Now, look, Josita, leave us get down to business. You see, there's a rich South American guy coming down to Duffy's Tavern tonight, and while we run a nice, respectable establishment here, we'd like to clip him. So, I'm kind of counting on you to use a little essay on him, you know, and I don't mean South America. There's only one thing.
Oh, yeah? What?
The way you talk.
What's the matter with the way I talk?
That taxicab Castilian. Tonight, try to forget you from Brooklyn, will you? And stick to Spanish.
Okay. How's this?
Vamos a batear duro que tenemos que ganar el campeonato el año que viene.
Well, that's great. By the way, what's it mean?
Get in there and fight, you bums. You gotta win next year.
Oh, no. Josita, when Senor De Niro gets here, I want you to forget that you ever heard of Brooklyn.
Okay, pal, gotcha.
Huh?
I mean, si, senor.
That's better.
Mr. Archie.
Yeah?
There's a bulging wallet with a man coming in.
Well, that must be him. Well, Senor De Niro, mucho gusto, Hoppo, Zeppo, Chico, Groucho.
I do not understand what you say.
You don't understand?
No.
I hope I ain't got two Brooklyn bums on my hand. I take it that you are Diego De Niro?
Si, senor. I am Don Diego De Niro of Castilla, Aragon, and Uruguay. And you?
Me? I'm Archie, a peon. Look, senor, refresh me up. You was at the Stork Club last mañana esta noche, correct?
Si, 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 senor.
And cuánto costo was your bill?
My bill, $1,000.
$1,000, huh? Well, I think we can meet the price. Now, what would you like to have, senor? A couple of cases of champagne or perhaps a barrel of caviar? You know, just a little something to get the bill a-rolling?
No, no, senor. I do not spend one single centavo.
What?
Until I see your South American floor show.
Showtime!
Well, Senor De Niro, you're in luck. The floor show is just about to begin. Maestro, a poor flavor. Dankeschön. Senors and senoritas, a funny thing she happened to me on the way to the hacienda tonight. I meet two senoritas, Polly and Molly. Polly, she don't like me, but Molly, she like me. So, I am cold to Polly and hot to Molly. You get it, senors? Hot to Molly. You get it? Laid an egg, huh? Eh?
A whole Spanish omelet.
Well, now to please Senor De Niro, we present that foreign favorite, that famous beauty from Brazil, Carmelita La Duffy.
This is a beauty?
Well, she had a rough time going through customs. Joined by Don Clifton Don Finnegan, better known as the Mongoose of Madrid. All right, leave us that wrong. Okay, muchachos, uno, dos, cuatro. Senor De Niro, mi good Spanish amigo, what do you have to say about that?
Oy.
Just a second. Are you inferring that our entertainment ain't South American?
I am inferring that your entertainment ain't entertainment.
Well, you just heard the peasants. We now give you our big piece of resistance, the Montevideo Margaret Truman, Josita Hernandez.
Muñequita linda, de cabello de oro, de dientes de perla, labio de rubí. Ay, dime si me quieres, como yo te adoro. Si de mí te acuerdas, como yo de ti. A
veces escucho un eco divino que envuelto en la brisa parece decir, ay, yo te quiero mucho, 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 tanto como entonces, siempre hasta
Bravo, bravissimo, magnifico. Archie, I would like to meet this talented senorita.
I thought that'd do it. Senor De Niro, meet up with Senorita Hernandez, a lanceman.
Senorita, es un gran placer. Un grandissimo placer.
Press the flesh, bud.
Senor De Niro, now that you like the show, how would you like to buy a dinner, or some champagne, or the tavern?
Later. Senorita, you sing beautifully. So much better than those stupid Americanos.
Stupid Americanos? How would you like a punch in the nose?
Josita, please. The champagne customer is always right. Look, senor, how about the $200 blue plate or perhaps a nice $50 hot dog?
Hot dogs? Hot dogs? Who eats hot dogs but crazy Americanos?
Now look, you big lug.
Josita, ex-nighty, the senator is perfectly correct. I agree. Eating hot dogs is simply abdominal.
Of course. Hot dogs are only for people who go to baseball games. Morons.
For $1,000, I suppose I gotta let them get away with it. You don't like baseball, eh, senor?
Baseball. It is stupid. And the most stupid of all are those, how you call them, those Brooklyn bombs.
That did it!
Josita, stop! Put down that pop bottle. You can't slug a South American. It's against Truman's Point Four policy.
Oh, Dios, esto es intolerable. I've been insulted. You're all phonies, I go.
But, senor, you ain't at your champagne.
Adios.
But, senor. Oh, now he's gone. Look, Josita, do you realize what you've done?
What?
You have just cost Duffy's Tavern 1,000 simoleons.
But he took a crack at the Dodgers.
So what?
Well, why couldn't he pick on some other team like the Giants?
Just a minute. What about the Giants?
They stink.
They stink, huh? Says who?
Says me.
What do you know about baseball? The only time you was ever in the bleachers was when you went to the hairdressers.
Ah, hey, your brother sings soprano.
Ah, your father sombrero. Fats, Fats, quick, throw this dame out of here before I malfeasance her. And Fats, when you throw her out, do one thing for me, will you?
What?
Point it towards Ebbets Field.
Listen again next week, friends, to Duffy's Tavern, transcribed by NBC.
That's Duffy's Tavern, November 2nd, 1951. Spanish floor show starring Ed Archie Gardner is heard on NBC. Let's take a break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. It's 1:08 in the morning. Thanks for staying up with us. This is the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. To my right, Lisa Wolf. We don't have the same political views, but you know what? We do love each other, though.
It's true.
We're like best buddies, but I tell you what, we don't get along when it comes to politics.
Luckily,
that's why we don't talk politics on
the
show.
We don't have a political show, so that's a good thing.
But off air, we talk about politics a little bit.
Just a little. I really don't want to, though.
We don't talk about it on the air.
You know,
because our show is all about classic radio.
We have gotten some messages lately, you know, about, you know, Carl saying this or Lisa saying that. And so everybody should know that this is all just our radio banter, our radio fun.
Yeah.
And truly, we really are best friends. And we hope that that respect and that genuine care for each other comes across.
Hey, we went to see Drury Lane Saturday Night Fever this
week
together.
We did. And we've had other social interactions that would go beyond the radio station.
What? She calls me all the
time. And anytime he's willing to take me out for dinner, I pretty much show up.
Took her to Stir Crazy.
That's true.
I'm a big spender.
It was like $10.99 plus hot tea.
Well, wait, you had a coupon for $8
off.
She gives me a coupon for eight. That was nice of you. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you.
I appreciate that. $8 off.
So,
and her whole dinner was $9.99.
So I think it was $10.99.
Cost me like $3.
But I had some green tea, so that's like another $3.
Wow, another couple of dollars there.
I'm a cheap date.
And then we saw Saturday Night Fever over at the Drury Lane Theater. It was fantastic. Make sure you go and see that.
Yes.
If you love, I mean, that movie changed my life.
I know.
Back in 1976.
As soon as I got the press release, I was so excited that I wanted you to read that it was coming. And instead of hitting forward to you, I hit reply to the PR person who sent it to me. And I went, Carl, oh my gosh, look at this, with exclamation marks across it. And she sent it back and she said, I don't think you meant to send this to me. And I got so excited. I said, I'm so sorry. I was so excited that I wanted Carl to know Saturday Night Fever is coming to Drury Lane.
I'm so glad you got tickets for that.
Thank you.
It was so much fun.
Me too.
It was great. It was a press night, and so afterwards they had like this huge spread of food.
Yeah, see, welcome to my world.
It's
a good world, right?
It was a great show. And the music and that singing, the DJ was great, wasn't he? The DJ up there, you know, that did the singing and the dancing, and it just was great.
There was a guy on there from Glee as well, a Unique.
He did great.
The guy who plays Unique.
Oh, man.
Mm-hmm.
Like an angel. It's really, really good. All right, in this hour on the WGN Radio Theater, we're going to tune into Cavalcade of America from 1952, all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
Dum, da-dum, 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 da-dum. It's time for Celebrity School, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the upcoming TV series Big Little Lies, based on the 2014 novel about murder and mystery.
All right. And you win.
You win a 4-CD Twilight Zone radio drama set.
Stacey Keach is the host.
These are radio
reenactments of the Twilight Zone television shows.
Yeah, and there's a lot of big actors' voices in it, and they are fantastic.
Well, thank you. You can win a 4-CD set, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. This gal was the star of 2014's Divergent.
You're right. I'm not. I'm Divergent.
All right, who is that very attractive young lady? 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break.
This is the WGN Radio Theater. We're still playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it one more time.
You're right. I'm not. I'm Divergent.
And we're going to talk to Dean from Elgin. Hi, Dean.
Hey, Miss Lisa. Let me tell you. The respect between you two comes through. I don't know what those other people are talking about.
Yeah, we appreciate that. We're best buddies. We just like to rib each other a little bit.
It's true. Most people see that. Every now and then we get somebody who says, why do you guys hate each other so much? Why do you work together? And I say, are you serious?
Like, yeah, they can't. They either can't be serious or they don't have a sense of humor.
I know. I said, I'm at a loss for words. Those were my exact words. I said, seriously, I just... Wow.
You know what, though, Dean? She calls me way too much.
He texts me all the time.
Always calls me.
I'm not a big caller.
Every time I look at my phone, it's Lisa Wolf.
I'm still sleeping in the morning. I wake up like two calls from Carl.
She's a late
8 in the morning. I'm like, what?
I get up early, and when I text her or call her, she's still sleeping. And I'm like, hey, sleepyhead, wake up.
I don't like to talk in the morning. I'm up. I just don't care to talk.
She's got my telephone number now. She can call me.
There you go. I'd rather talk to you than
Carl. Don't expect a call before noon, though. I'll tell you that.
That's true. All right. So, Dean, who is that young lady we're talking about?
Shailene Woodley.
It's Shailene Woodley. You are absolutely right. And we are so happy to give you a Twilight Zone. They're audio dramas. It's a 4-CD set. I don't know exactly which will be in the 4-CD set, but
there'll be 4 good ones.
4 good ones. So those are the ones you'll get. 4 good ones. Oh, but they are terrific. And I've heard many of them. And I really enjoy them. And I think that you will too. So thank you so much for calling in.
Thanks, Dean. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Take care, Dean.
And you know what, Lisa? I bet you Shailene Woodley gets up before noon. I just bet she does.
I get up before noon. I just can't really talk at 8 in the morning.
Right.
Especially to, you know.
Right. Especially to me.
Like
with
half
my
asleep.
Problems. Lisa, I have a problem. Call like, me. I'll text Lisa. Lisa, I have a problem. Call
no,
me.
No, here's Carl. Lisa, call me. It's important.
Yeah. Call me. Important.
And I'm like,
and then it never is.
It's like 8 really in the morning. I'm like,
really
I'll call him around 10.
All right. Cavalcade of America. Before we get into this, I do want to mention that Dan Jaffe, the CEO of Cats Pride, will be here tomorrow.
Right.
And we're going to give away 2 1-year supply of Cats Pride kitty litter.
Yeah, that was kind of confusing, but that's exactly what we're going to be doing.
Two people are going to win
an entire year's supply of Cats Pride kitty litter. This is tomorrow, or
tonight, actually. Right.
Dan will be here about 11 o'clock. We'll do our drawing just after 11. You still have one more day to send in a picture of your cat to catspridephoto@gmail.com. All we need is your name and your cat's name, your city and state. We will do the big drawing this evening, and we would love to give you a year's supply of Cats Pride kitty litter. I know I buy the Cat's Pride Ultimate Care Fresh and Light. I get it at Jewel, but they have it at, all over the place.
Right. So email us a picture of you and your kitty cat to catspridephoto@gmail.com. Okay.
All right.
All right. Time for Cavalcade of America. It was an anthology drama. Started on radio in 1935, lasted all the way to 1953, sponsored by DuPont. It was documented historical events using stories of individual courage, initiative, and achievement with triumphs against all odds, often through technological innovation. Stories were by Arthur Miller and Stuart Hawking, some great writers. And the stars were big stars, Orson Welles, Ray Collins, Cary Grant, John McIntyre, Tyrone Power. On this particular episode, it's Robert Cummings. Let's go back to April 29th, 1952. Here's part one of Going Up on Cavalcade of America.
The DuPont Company of Wilmington, Delaware, makers of better things for better living through chemistry, presents the Cavalcade of America. Tonight's star, Robert Cummings. Tonight's story, Going Up.
Going up. This elevator stops at all floors. Going up.
Tonight, we'd like to bring you the story of the man who made the words going up a part of America. It all started in the middle of the 1800s with a young man named Elisha Graves Otis. It was a bright, sunny day when Elisha arrived in Yonkers, New York, with his wife and family. Together, he and Betsy climbed the stairs to their new home.
Maybe you better rest a moment, dear.
Now, Elisha, I wish you wouldn't treat me like an old lady. I'm only 27.
Now, Betsy, you
know.
All
right, I'm 28.
Well, there's still one more flight.
Ah.
Oh, Betsy, it's got a wonderful living room. Why, you can see the river and beyond.
Oh, darling, I do wish you'd stop worrying until I see it. I know it's going to be just wonderful.
All right. Well, here we are.
We'll open the door. Now, pick me up.
What?
Pick me up.
Oh, now, Betsy, we've got children. What'll people think if I carry you across the threshold like a bride?
I always want to be your bride, Elisha. Come on, pick me up.
Oh, all right, then. My, Mrs. Otis, you're putting on weight, aren't you?
That's a fine thing to say to your bride. Now carry me in. That's it.
Betsy, you do like it, don't you?
It's quite the most comfortable place I've ever been in.
This is the living room. And
I was talking about your arms. You can put me down now, darling.
Oh, now, Betsy, be serious.
All right, where's the kitchen?
Well, I'm afraid it isn't very big.
It'll do just fine.
Betsy, this time things will be different. All my life I've been looking for a position like the one I've got now.
We can put the couch near the window.
Oh, and there's a great future in the bedstead-making business.
Hi, boy.
Betsy, you're not listening to me. Will you please listen?
I'm listening. I'm listening, darling.
Yes, but you don't believe me, do you?
Elisha, I just don't want you to be disappointed again.
But this time it's going to be different. Honey, why, these two rooms, we'll laugh at them in a couple of years. I can see myself now becoming Mr. Mays's indispensable man. I can see him coming to me and saying, Elisha, without you, this business would never have grown. And, Betsy, I'll grow with it. No more wandering, no more drifting, no more temporary homes.
Have I ever objected?
Oh, Betsy, I don't know why you've put up with me so long. I'm very grateful, but I just don't know why you have.
I do.
Why?
Because I love you so.
Come in.
Did you want to see me, Mr. Mays?
Oh, Otis, come in, come in. Here, sit down. Here, have a cigar.
A cigar?
Yes. Oh,
thank you, sir.
Well, light?
No, thanks, sir. I'll just save it until later.
Hey, Otis, that reminds me, that lathe you invented, huh? I was talking to some of the boys about it. Showed them what it did for our business, and they turned green. Green, Otis, positively green.
Well, business has been good, then.
Oh, good. Oh, it's been phenomenal. And it's going to get better.
Yes, sir.
You know, that's what I like about you, Otis. You aren't just an inventor, a dreamer. You get a grasp on things. I like a man who gets a grasp on things. Here, have a cigar.
Oh, thank you, sir.
This reminds me, you know, we're expanding. You know that building at the foot of Vark Street?
Yes, sir.
Well, I can get the whole thing for a song. It's perfect for what I need, except for one thing.
What's that, sir?
It's the hoist in the building. It's cumbersome, slow, and it's dangerous. I need it to haul lumber all the way up to the fourth floor, and the thing will never do.
Perhaps if I looked at it, sir...
You're going to have to pay a man triple wages to ride the thing.
Maybe I can do something to make the hoist safe, sir.
Otis, you are a dreamer. You will never be able to make a safe elevator. Just make it a little less dangerous. That's all we ask now.
I might have to build a new one.
Yeah. Well, you really think you can do it?
Yes, sir.
All right. I'll tell you what you do. Take off a few days. Think it out. And then let me know what you come up with.
Fine. I'll be in touch with you, sir.
Fine. Oh, I say, Otis.
Yes, sir?
I hate to bother you, but you don't happen to have an extra cigar, do you?
Anybody home?
Elisha?
What a beautiful day. Most beautiful day I've ever seen.
It rained all afternoon.
I did.
Now, supposing you wipe that Cheshire grin off your face and tell me what's on your mind.
My mind? There's nothing on my mind. Why?
Something's happened. I know it has. Come on, tell me.
Well, Mrs. Otis, I had a long conversation with Mr. Mays this afternoon.
You did?
Mm-hmm. Elisha, he said to me, Elisha, have a cigar.
You didn't take it?
Of course I took it.
Well, you don't smoke.
I know that.
Don't keep me in suspense.
Well, we talked about the lathe I invented.
And what did he say?
Well, because of that lathe your husband invented, Mrs. Otis, our company is being forced to move to a much larger factory.
Oh, darling, that's wonderful.
Of course, there's one small little problem he wants me to solve. You see, there's a hoist in the building, but it's not safe. So I told Mr. Mays I'd invent a safe elevator for him right away.
You what?
Sure, it's quite simple, I think.
And just when are you going to invent this hoist?
Huh? Oh, why, as soon as I can think the thing out. A lot of problems, Betsy, a lot of problems.
That's good.
What do you mean, that's good?
Well, for a minute, I thought you were going to invent it before dinner.
The main problem, Betsy, is the hoist rope. Gosh, it just won't stand the strain.
Elisha, you've done nothing but eat and sleep hoist for 3 weeks.
Yes, and I've read books. Betsy, don't forget, I've read almost 100 books, and there isn't even an inkling as to the answer.
It's past 10 o'clock.
Don't you think you could put out the candles so we could get some sleep?
Hmm? Oh, I'm sorry. Sure. There. I can think in the dark.
I do wish you'd try to get some sleep.
I'll try. Good night, Betsy.
No kiss? Good night, Elisha.
Betsy. Betsy, wake up.
What's wrong, Elisha?
Betsy, I've solved it. I've solved it. I've been working on the wrong angle. Now, supposing the cable wasn't the answer at all. Supposing I put a wagon spring in the side of the car to work the ratchets automatically when the cable snapped.
Well, I just am afraid I don't understand what a ratchet is, dear.
Oh, darling, it's very simple. I'll explain it to you. You see, a ratchet is when you take it, well, it's what I'm going to use to make the elevator safe. Pile that lumber on, Fred. Man, that elevator can handle three times that weight. How many months does it have to be in operation before you men realize that?
Mr. Otis, I don't like to bother you, sir, but Mr. Mays wants to see you in his office.
Oh, all right. I got to check with Mr. Mays, Fred. Be back in a minute.
Come in.
Ah, do you want to see me, Mr. Mays?
Sit down, Otis.
You look a little tired, sir.
I am tired.
I was just inspecting the elevator, sir. It's working much better than we'd even hoped.
It's an amazing job, Otis. Frankly, I didn't believe that anyone could invent a hoist that would really be safe.
Well, thank you, sir.
Otis, I'm sure you know that business has fallen off.
Oh, yes, sir, but general conditions have been rather bad, sir.
Yeah. You have a wonderful gift of understatement.
Well, is the company in trouble, sir?
I'm sure that you'll be able to find other employment.
Other employment?
I haven't told the others yet, Otis. You're the first.
You mean you're laying me off, sir? I mean, well, I'll cut my wages if it'll help you, sir.
I appreciate the gesture, Otis, but I'm afraid it isn't just a matter of laying off. I've been forced against the wall. Just can't meet the notes. Overexpanded, I expect, but... Well, no matter the cause, the company is filing bankruptcy.
Bankruptcy?
Bankruptcy. Cleaned out, Otis. This may surprise you, but... I can't even offer you a cigar.
Can I offer you a cigar?
Oh, no, but thank you so much.
Because I could see you smoking a cigar.
Me, yes.
You're the type of gal that would smoke a cigar.
I'm a big cigar smoker.
Yeah, you are.
Yummy.
You probably chew tobacco, too.
I like the Cuban kind.
Do you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The
well,
Cuban.
You like...
I like what?
Nothing.
Good.
That's the first portion of Cavalcade of America with Going Up from April 29th, 1952. Let's take a quick break, then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, it's program 149 in the series, right, Lisa?
Yes, sir.
When we come back here tonight in like 20-something hours... We have some more classic radio, good comedy with the Halls of Ivy, Ronald and Benita Coleman, then good detective adventure on Broadway Is My Beat, then it's scary stuff, just like you. You're pretty scary.
Oh, I like it that
pretty
way.
Pretty scary. Inner Sanctum Mysteries. So three great classic radio shows coming your way at 11 p.m. tonight till 2 o'clock in the morning when we come back for our Sunday edition of the WGN Radio Theater. But right now it's time for the conclusion to Cavalcade of America.
Happy birthday to you!
No, don't shout it. Sing it.
But I thought you were supposed to say it loud.
Oh, I wonder what's keeping your father. He should have been here an hour ago. All right, now, let's try it again,
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
That's it.
Happy birthday,
oh, that's a lot.
Dear Papa. Happy birthday to you.
Oh, what a voice.
Mama, tell him to stop teasing me.
Oh, shh. Wait a minute. It's your father. Oh, here. Hold the cake, Norton. And remember, just as soon as he opens the door, we all sing together. Now.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy
birthday. Elisha, you all right?
Oh, I'm sorry I'm late, dear. I was
walking
around. Run off
to bed, children.
But I'm hungry.
No, you get ready for bed, and I'll bring you your dinner. Help your brother, Charles.
Come along, Norton.
Elisha.
Yes, dear.
I kept the boys up till now. It's your birthday.
Darling, I've been... My birthday?
Mm.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Betsy. I forgot.
That's all right. Where have you been?
Oh, it was so nice out. I just walked around. I forgot all about the time. Come on, call the boys out. We'll have the party. Hmm?
Elisha, I'm your wife. You can't fool me.
I was afraid to come home, Betsy.
You were afraid to come home to me?
I was ashamed.
Sit down, dear. Tell me.
It's funny, isn't it? We were right here in this same part of the room when I made my grand speech. All the things I was going to do for you and the children. How proud I was going to make you of your husband.
I am proud of you, Elisha.
You won't be.
Tell me.
Well, Mr. Mays called me in to see him. But it wasn't to talk about the lathe or the elevator or anything like that. It was to tell me that the company is going bankrupt.
Bankrupt? Oh, Elisha, I'm so sorry.
Sorry? Oh, Betsy, do you realize what this means? I'm out of a job. We have no money. We have no future. No place to go. Betsy, accept my apologies for being such a poor provider. For being such a failure.
You're tired, Elisha.
Yes, I'm so tired. Oh, Betsy, what are we going to do? We have nothing, nothing.
We have each other.
Dear Betsy. Dear unselfish Betsy. You give so much, and I give so little.
Tonight on The Cavalcade of America, Robert Cummings is starring as Elisha Graves Otis, with Judith Parrish as Betsy. With the Depression, Elisha Otis found himself without a job. For months, he walked the streets of New York, but no one was hiring. So finally, even though his heart wasn't in it, Elisha Graves Otis and family were again on the move.
What do you want me to pack this, Betsy?
Trunk. We won't need it till we arrive. They say the weather in California is just marvelous. Outside of a little rain, it's just a parrot. You're not happy, are you?
Does it show that much?
I'm afraid it does.
Oh, I'm sorry. I guess I feel I'm burying my dreams. Well, at least I'm going to bury them in a golden graveyard. What's that? You expecting someone?
No, I said goodbye to everyone this morning.
Yes?
I'm looking for Otis.
My name is Otis.
Yeah, that's fine. Are you going to invite me in or aren't you?
Of course, yes. Come in.
Thank you. My name is Newhouse, Benjamin Newhouse of New York.
Well, how do you, this is my wife.
How do you do, ma'am?
How do you do? Won't you sit down?
Yes. 4 flights. It's some climb for a man of my weight.
Well, Mr. Newhouse, I'll tell you what I'll do. Next time you come to visit us, I'll have an elevator installed here for you.
Well, that's exactly why I call. Yes. Mr. Otis, I own a picture frame factory and cabinet shop in New York.
Uh-huh.
6 months ago, I had a very deplorable accident in my factory. The cable on my elevator broke, and 2 men were killed.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, sir, but I'm afraid I don't know what I can do about it.
You can build me 2 elevators, and not 2 ordinary elevators either. I want 2 of those Otis safety elevators.
I'm sorry, Mr. Newhouse, but I'm not in the elevator business. In fact, I've never really been in the elevator business.
Why not?
Oh, Mr. Newhouse, it's not that easy. It takes money to start a business like that.
Well, what do you think banks are for? Borrow it. You've already got 1 order. I can guarantee that. Any bank can see there's a future to a business like that. It's a sound investment, man.
Say he's right, Betsy. I could do it. I know I could.
Of course you can. And I shall be happy to place the first order with the Otis Elevator Company.
Mr. Newhouse, with the Otis Safety Elevator Company.
Elisha!
Alicia, champagne. Oh, don't you think you're being a little extravagant?
Well, Mrs. Otis, it isn't often that I have the extreme pleasure of dining alone with my wife in New York's most famous restaurant.
But the prices are so high.
Oh, who cares about the prices? This is an occasion, Betsy. This afternoon, we finished the new house job.
Well, I think I'd feel a lot happier if you had some more orders.
Oh, they'll come, Betsy. They'll come faster than I can handle them. Just you wait and see. Why, within a year, we'll probably have to move to a bigger building.
I hope so.
Now, come on, drink up your champagne. Let's dance, hmm?
Dance?
Why not?
Because you don't know how to dance.
No, well, I don't know how to smoke cigars either, but I never turn them down. It should have been so easy. So very, very easy.
Were you saying something, dear?
What? Oh, no, I was just talking to myself. Children in bed?
Finally. Darling, you look worried.
I am. Oh, Betsy, I'm tired of swimming against the tide. Nobody wants elevators. Nobody's interested in elevators, no matter how safe they are. All these months and not one single order.
I don't understand it. You build the only safe elevator in the country.
In the world. But outside of my family, it seems to be a well-kept secret.
Elisha, if I thought that you'd lost faith...
Faith? Betsy, I wish I could tell you about the things I dream. Big cities, buildings 15 stories high with towers that pierce the clouds. 15, did I say? Betsy, I picture buildings 20 stories high. A whole new world. But I just can't get anyone else to see it.
Then it's up to you to make them see it.
It isn't that simple.
Well, I didn't say it was going to be simple. I just said it's up to you to open their eyes. Think of something different. Well, I don't know what, but something.
Something different?
Well, you say people don't want elevators. Well, how can they, Elisha? Maybe they don't know about them. You know about them. Mr. Newhouse knows, but...
Something different. Something so spectacular that the eyes of the world can be opened.
I wish I could help you.
But you have, darling, you have. Where's the evening paper?
I think you're sitting on it.
Oh, so I am. Now, where did I see that article?
Well,
it's not on page 3.
What are you muttering about?
Here it is. Now, listen to this, Betsy. This summer at the Crystal Palace, New York City is going to be honored with the annual American Institute Fair. All the latest improvements in modern living and so forth and so on.
I'm afraid I don't understand.
Darling, there are going to be thousands and thousands of people there. Thousands upon thousands. And I'm going to do something to entertain them.
Well, what?
That's something different you suggested. I'm going to build an elevator 40 feet high right at the entrance of the fair.
Yes. It should be quite a sight.
Oh, it'll be the most amazing thing at the fair. People will come from all over the country, and when they leave the fair, they're going back with the name of Elisha Graves Otis on their lips. And do you know why?
Because you built the elevator?
Because I built the elevator. And because I'm going to ride that elevator to the top. And when I get to the top, I'll make them open their eyes.
Programs to the fair here. Get your souvenir programs, folks. Know the locations of all the wonderful eye-opening exhibitions found on the Midway.
Yes.
You can't afford to be without one. Only 10 cents.
You're not going to do it, Elisha. You can't.
I must, Betsy. We've had this out 1,000 times. How else can I prove the elevator is safe?
But to ride all the way up and then cut the cable.
But it's safe. It's an Otis safety elevator. Betsy, you yourself said I had to do something different. Something that would make them sit up and take notice.
Well, I didn't mean you should kill yourself.
Well, it's 2 o'clock, Betsy. They're all waiting. I've got to do it.
Please, Elisha, for my sake and the boys, please.
Believe me, Betsy, I'm doing this for you and the boys. Maybe you'd better go over and sit on the bench there, hmm?
Well, I won't be able to look. I won't.
Oh, have faith, Betsy, please.
In what?
In me. Just have faith in me. No, I've got to get over there. Have faith in me.
Elisha!
All right, folks, step right over this way. Step over this way for the most spectacular feat of the fair. Mr. Otis and his elevator. Step over this way, folks. Over this way.
There he is. That's Otis getting on the elevator.
The program says he's going up 4 floors and then cut the rope.
I bet he doesn't ride it. It's a fake elevator.
Well, nobody but a fool would go up 4 stories and take a drop.
Ladies and gentlemen, please, may I have your attention? You have all heard it said that there is nothing new under the sun. Well, I stand before you now in the car of an Otis safety elevator to disprove that statement. Now, what happens today will prove to you that there can be a great and a new world ahead of us. A new world, ladies and gentlemen, where the cities of men will reach up to touch the clouds. All right, Fred, pull me up.
Oh, he's really going up.
Will he actually come to take
him? Well, somebody ought to stop him.
I am now at 10 feet, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm still going up. Going up because that is the only direction that the future will take. I am now exactly 20 feet.
Oh, no.
Friend, what you are about to see is the future shape before your very eyes. Higher, Fred, higher.
This is suicide, I tell you, suicide.
I don't care what anybody says. That man has courage.
Yes, she's crazy, that's what I'm
saying. Ladies and gentlemen, I am now at 40 feet. At the top of this elevator. Four full stories above you. I am now about to try an experiment that will once and for all times prove what I've been telling you here today. Now, this is not just an ordinary elevator. It is a safe elevator. Remember that. And now, in exactly 5 seconds, I shall cut the cable.
Oh, thank you!
There are women and children down here, Otis!
They don't want to see a man kill himself.
One, two, three, four, five, and I cut the cable.
Did you see that? It only dropped a foot and a half.
Congratulations, Mr. Otis.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Let me through to my wife, will you please?
I always knew you could do it, Mr. Otis. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. Betsy.
Oh, Elisha, you're safe. Oh, let me look at you. You're a brave man, Mr. Otis. Oh, a very brave
man. No more dangerous than crossing the street or taking a bath.
Elisha.
Oh, darling, I'm sorry.
Let me through here, please. I say, let me through, please. Thank you. Mr. Otis?
Yes, sir?
Sir, I'd like to speak to you.
Well, at your service, sir.
My name is Cavanaugh. Charles Cavanaugh, Cavanaugh Mills Incorporated. I'm mighty interested in your elevator.
Well, I thank you for your interest, Mr. Cavanaugh.
Really safe, you say?
Well, you saw it with your own eyes, sir.
So I did. And I might say that, well, I'm more than just interested. I was wondering if I could call at your office, say tomorrow morning around 9.
Well, I'll certainly be there.
I've got 5 mills in Virginia. And I'd like 1 elevator installed in every mill.
5?
That's right, 5. Well, I'll see you at 9 in the morning.
Oh, Elisha, your idea is a success already. An order for 5 elevators. Think of that. Elisha. Oh, people are looking at us.
I know.
Well, you're kissing me.
Mm-hmm. And it's much more fun than riding an elevator.
Manhattan's skyline, Chicago's loop, San Francisco's towers. These are the monuments to the genius of Elisha Otis, whose engineering skill inspired the vertical cities of today. Thanks to Robert Cummings and the Cavalcade Players for tonight's story, Going Up. Next week, the DuPont Cavalcade will present John Lund and Walter Hamden in An American from France. Be sure to listen. Tonight's DuPont Cavalcade was written by David Harmon. Original music was composed by Arden Cornwell, conducted by Donald Voorhees. The program was directed by John Zoller. In tonight's cast, you heard Robert Cummings starring as Elisha Otis. Judith Parrish was featured as Betsy. Fred Irving Lewis was Mays, and Henry Calvin was Newhouse. This is Cy Harris speaking.
Don't forget next week, our stars, John Lund and Walter Hamden. The Cavalcade of America comes to you from the Belasco Theater in New York and is sponsored by the DuPont Company of Wilmington, Delaware, makers of better things for better living through chemistry.
Next, it's Barry Craig, confidential investigator on NBC.
See, now, Lisa, the next time we're in an elevator together and you see that name Otis up there, you don't have to ask me what that means. You now know from this Cavalcade of America, it was Elisha Otis who invented the safety elevator.
All right. No,
right?
I won't ask you. In this episode, I'm always asking you
stupid
questions. I know.
She's like, Otis, why is there a guy named Otis up there?
I just have to stop
Otis elevator.
Dumb thing.
Going up from April 29th, 1952, The Cavalcade of America, starring Robert Cummings. Hope you enjoyed that. All right, when we come back tonight, we have more classic radio. We have three more classic radio shows, right, Lisa?
We sure do.
What are we playing?
We've got The Halls of Ivy, Broadway Is My Beat, and Inner Sanctum Mysteries.
Yes,
don't
indeed.
Miss it.
You know, we lost an icon this week. Oh,
did
my gosh.
We ever?
I was so sad when I heard that Mary Tyler Moore passed away. And Dave Plyer is going to have a real tribute to her on his show, and I won't say any more because we have the man with us here. He can talk about what he's going to do.
Maury Amsterdam is going to be doing.
No.
Maury Amsterdam.
No,
he's dead.
No.
He's dead.
Yeah.
No.
Mel Cooley is going to be doing. What was it? Richard Deacon.
Yeah.
Richard Deacon.
Yeah.
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 You know, we're gonna hear from Carl Reiner.
Wow.
And then we're going to go back and look at some other interviews that I have done with the cast of Mary Tyler Moore and the Dick Van Dyke Show with Dick Van Dyke, Gavin McLeod
sure.
from
wow.
some years ago. Which is one of the most fascinating stories, and Betty White as well. So listening to all of those conversations talk about Mary, because everyone who has talked about her talks about her in such a loving way, you know, from a behind-the-scenes perspective, and that she was kind of she was a young kid when she started the Dick
Van
Dyke
Show. Do you know what her first television show was?
Richard Diamond?
He's got it. Richard Diamond,
Richard
Private
Diamond,
Detective.
Yeah.
You never saw her, though. Just her legs.
And a little shadow. Like, sometimes you see a little shadow. She was a hot
David Jansen. This was before David Jansen became the fugitive.
He was Richard Diamond?
Yeah.
In the TV show.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I did not know that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Richard Diamond,
you.
Private Detective.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah, on radio, it was Dick Powell.
Right.
And then you saw her legs, her beautiful legs.
Yeah. That's right.
And isn't it true that she started on Dick Van Dyke and she said she was actually older than she was?
I saw that clip with Johnny Carson. She said she's 23 and she was 21. She was afraid she was too young to be opposite Dick Van Dyke.
Dick had told me off air that he has said this publicly, but he said to me off air, he was, boy, did I have a crush on her.
He didn't
10
say
years?
That on Johnny Carson.
No. But he was 10 years older, maybe?
Yeah. Something
he was
like
30,
that. He was definitely 30-something.
Yeah.
What a gorgeous woman. Yeah. So sweet. And
but this is
so...
one of those things that it's been a long time since, you know, we talked about so many people that passed last year, like it was one after another.
Yeah.
This one was significant.
Yeah, I agree.
Did you see the CBS tribute that they had?
I did not.
Yeah.
I thought,
I'm not allowed to watch
TV. I said this.
Part of my rehabilitation.
I said this in social media. I felt like the first 20 minutes was the Oprah and Gayle show.
It was too much. It was a lot of Oprah.
It was a salute to her a little bit too much.
I agree. Had a lot of Oprah on there.
But then the last part of it was done very much like CBS Sunday Morning or 60 Minutes, where they had a correspondent tell a different perspective of Mary's life, and I thought that was very well done.